Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Thanks for joining me here on the D Word Podcast for some more dementia talk. Now, engagement with people living with dementia is something family members and friends find difficult as their loved one's world is changing around them. That's where this edition's guest comes in. Florence Tai Lu is a dementia engagement expert and founder of Dementia Partnered Care. Florence, lovely to meet you and greet you as my guest here on the D Word, a dementia engagement specialist with Dementia Partnered Care. Where did your interest in dementia come from in the first place?
So, I think my interest started really when I was a kid, around seven, nine maybe. We had my great grandmother who had Alzheimer's disease and was living in a care home about 2-3 minutes away, walking distance from my place. And so you can imagine, as a kid, we were allowed to go see her without supervision. So it was the occasion to be spending time with her and going to have coffee. They had a cafeteria and so on. And one thing that I remember at the time was that I really loved spending time with her and getting to know her. But I also realized that a lot of people did not have as many visits as she did. And what we did with my sister at the time was create some talent shows. I think we did three of them. and during the talent show, there was a huge room where people could come, and they could come with their families, and we'd do a show. Don't ask me how long it was, because I couldn't tell you. but it was really a fun time to create connection and to allow families to create memories with the loved one.
Yeah, I mean, do you look back on that from what you're doing now and kind of relate it to the challenges you had trying to remain engaged with your grandmother?
So for me as a child, engaging with her was not really difficult, I guess. Also because I never knew her without Alzheimer's. She used to live pretty far away from us when I was a kid, and then she moved to the care home, and I don't remember her without Alzheimer's, and I don't remember her when she did not live in the care home. It was always, I remember we would visit her and we always knew we had to present ourselves first. And so it was funny, one time I'd go with my sister and I said, "Hi, it's Florence." And she looked at me, she knew she was happy to see us. She did not always recognize us, but she knew she was in good hands with us. And so I said hi, and she was like, "Oh, and who's your friend with you?" And I said, "Oh, that's Audrey." She was like, "Oh, that's funny, my grandchild is called Audrey as well." And we had a laugh and we just went on, and it was really because we still had the innocence of a child, I guess it was pretty fluid. And I don't remember moments where it was challenging to really have a conversation with her.
Yeah, I guess, you know, as a child you don't judge, do you? That's grandma.
And maybe also as a child you have, your grandma doesn't judge you as much also. So when we were making communication mistakes because of the dementia or things like that, it was, "Oh, they're kids, it's okay," you know? So we had this relationship where both of us could make mistakes.
And I guess if you look on now, and in terms of engaging with people living with dementia, that we could both make mistakes is quite an important lesson. But sometimes, particularly in the case of carers, they want to be 100% right, and it's difficult for them to accept that they are going to make mistakes.
And I think that's one of the it's actually one of the big lessons my grandma taught me, that it's okay to make mistakes in the communication we do we have. Also, as carers, often I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I said something wrong, or I spoke too fast, or I'm talking too loud. I have a tendency to talk too loud. And so just saying I'm sorry kind of creates this relationship where none of us has to be perfect.
I did, you said you'd never known your grandmother without Alzheimer's, and you were entering into a world that seemed natural at that point. I guess in terms of carers, it's very difficult because you're almost hopping from one world to another.
For the Carol, it's different. When you're a carer, you go into the room, you don't know who you're going to meet.
Let's go on to the kind of approach that you're looking to engender. Tapa Snow obviously is someone that produces a lot of good stuff, got a very big following, and to try and engender that approach into care. I mean, tell us a little bit about for those listeners that don't know, what does that kind of approach consist of?
Yeah, so Tipa Snow's approach is really based on the relationship between the care partner and the person living with dementia. Maintaining the relationship rather than and having this as the central, rather than having the task as a central. So preferring consent, making consent really the central of everything, and communicating with the person in a way that allows the person to feel like they have control, like they have safety, and they can make decisions on their own.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Got some great guests lined up on the podcast as we inch towards summer, but there's always room for you to tell your dementia story. You can contact us by email at tdwradio@gmail.com. Back to my guest now, Florence Tyloo. And I guess it's a little bit about imparting confidence, because I guess when, that if you get a diagnosis of any serious condition, I've been in that shoes with another condition, and your confidence takes a real hit. And it's a case of trying to bring that back.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's really also in the way you talk to the person, starting by presenting yourself, telling them who you are, what your role is, and then giving, for instance, if you want to have, if you're hoping for an activity to take place, it's giving options between, okay, would you prefer having ice cream, or would you prefer having hot cocoa, or things like that, just to really give the person this agency. And as you said, when we're the person needing help, whether it's because of health conditions or whatever, well, often this agency is feels like it's taken away from us, and so it's bringing it back.
Yeah, I did. I think it's absolutely right. But For some people, that's very difficult, obviously, because they've seen the person as they were, and it's very difficult to accept the person that they are now. I mean, how do you go about kind of encouraging people to make that step between the two worlds, as it were?
So I use engagement strategies. For me, I'll take you an example of someone I knew who was with their sibling. And the sibling had dementia, was not talking anymore, and they were just telling me, I don't know how to connect with them anymore because we used to have conversations. That's what we used to do. We would sit down, have coffee, and just talk, have a chat. But now I can't do that anymore. So what do I do instead? And so what I did with them was we played balloon. We played with the balloon, just throwing the ball. At the beginning, I was with them to kind of support the sister who was needing a bit of guidance. And so we played with the balloon. Then once the sister felt confident, kind of stepped away and came back a little bit later. I kept an eye just in case. And they were just sitting together holding hands. And it was just creating this bridge into, okay, let's connect again. Let's recreate this relationship.
Do you think sometimes that we overcomplicate things as well? Because you've just mentioned there, it's a simple activity, sitting there with a balloon, and sometimes we kind of overcomplicate it and don't look at the obvious.
I mean, it's human nature, I think, to overcomplicate things, to see the wall and just see that and to not take a step back. And I think that's where caregivers in a care home or me as a dementia engagement specialist or people like Keep Us Know, we're here to kind of help take a step back from this wall and realize, okay, what's around it? What's there that still is possible? But when you're in the situation, when you're the family member, sometimes that can be really difficult because you know your loved one the way they were, you want them back. And you're stepping into the unknown. Even in situations that happen every day, like let's say my loved one is always saying no to going out for ice cream. Well, even if it happens every day, it's still new every day because it's a question of feeling. It's not a question of reality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's almost like learning a different language in a certain respect. It's looking at those signs and interpreting them as to what they mean. And I don't want to go out and have an ice cream. For me, it might be because it's raining outside. I don't fancy an ice cream. I don't feel, but for someone else, it can be. Somewhat limited dementia, it can be completely different because you've got to communicate in a different way. When I was running my activity groups, I had a guy who went to a football match at Wembley with his family, and he got lost in the crowd. Thankfully, they found him again. But his way of explaining it to me was he started talking about roadworks and blockages. And everybody was looking, thinking, well, what's that got to do with it? And then suddenly, when you step back and thought about it, that's what he was facing. And that was him trying to explain to me what had happened.
It is a new language. It is understanding the new communication. And actually, what you were saying about this new language makes me think about also one resident that I had. I was assisting them to stand up. Okay. And with anybody else, no problem. We had a good relationship, and I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure I'm we have enough confidence to for me to assist them, but refuse. Every time they refused to my assistants to stand up. Once they were up, I could do everything with them, help them also for more intimate things. But standing up, they would hold my wrist and just go like this on my wrist. And at first I was like, well, I don't know what to do. And I had to ask my colleagues every time to help me until I realized, well, when people touch my wrist, the first reaction they have is, wow, you're skinny. The radio, people listening to the radio don't see me, but I'm pretty skinny. And so the reaction when you touch my wrist is, wow, you're skinny. And once I realized that, I asked this person who wasn't really talking, are you scared because I'm skinny? And she kind of nodded. Like, do you think I'm going to let you fall? Is that why you don't want to stand up? She was like, yes. And so I started, I was like, oh, you know, I've got you. I'm really strong. And I showed her my muscle, which I actually don't really have, but but for the point of it, I was showing my muscles and I was hitting my belly. And I was like, yeah, look, just hit my belly. Just see how strong I am. And all of a sudden they kind of laughed at me asking them to hit my belly and then just agreed to stand up with me. They knew I had their back. And from that on, every time they were kind of hesitant of coming with me, I was just like, yeah, I've got you. Look at my muscles. And it's just learning that new communication way, that new way of talking, that language.
In doing that, I think you have to be a person who thinks outside the box a little bit, don't you? You know, you don't learn that in a textbook, do you?
No, you don't. You don't learn it in a textbook.
And I think that's really important that you have to engage like that. Now, in doing that, obviously, if you're talking to people working in a care facility, they're very busy, they've got a finite amount of time, they've got loads of tasks to do. How do you approach them to try and include some of what we've been talking about in what they do?
I think it's finding ways in engagement to include the person in what you're doing. I'll give you an example of one place where I was working at. Well, every morning we had coffee and tea and cookies. And so every morning I would make the coffee and give the cookies to everybody. And that was my task. And we had someone who was always asking for help, like you all often have in care homes. And one time I realized, I was like, this person likes to bake and to do things like that. So every time when I arrived in the morning, I went to them and I was like, hey, I need your help. Can you help me make the coffee and give the cookies? And of course, they couldn't really help me. The situation was, they couldn't make the coffee or things like that. But it was, they were staying with me, looking at me make the coffee. And I was like, do I put enough cream in it? Do you think that was enough? Or should I put more? Do you like coffee? Do you take cream in your coffee? And just including them in this part of the process. And then once I had made the coffee and it was distributing it, sometimes the person would have the cup also in their hand, sometimes not, and just walk with me in every place. And so it wasn't about me having to choose between staying with the person or doing my task, but including them. And I think if we start thinking outside the box, very often we can do that.
You know, a couple of things come out of that. One is inclusion, as you say. And the other thing is having a knowledge of the person. I remember care facility when I was in Canada in the summer. When you walked in the door, they had little notes on the top that said, I think it was five or six things about whoever the resident of that room was. And so anybody going in, even me, not knowing them, could have a quick look up there. Oh, likes baseball or loves to grow flowers or whatever. And there's an immediate start to a conversation.
That's really a good idea, actually. Kind of the who am I? This idea of giving ideas of how to connect with the person right away.
I think,
Was that in a care home?
yeah, that was in a care facility.
Care
I
facility.
think one of the things of that sometimes doesn't work is that you get this thing, somebody files it away in a dusty office, and nobody looks at it. Whereas if it's a continual process. When I started with managing groups for people living with dementia, I thought, well, I've got to find something out about all these people and see if we've got anything in common. And by the end of it, there were probably 60 people that came in three groups over 3 days, and I could tell you one fact about all of them, and that and they reacted as well. For guys, interested in football, we then, whoa, we were away. We were talking football. For some of the ladies that were interested in music, whoa, we were talking music. And I found it quite simple to do, and it still amazes me that people find it difficult. But I guess to kind of, pose this into a question, is that because of the fear factor that people don't know about dementia?
I honestly couldn't tell you if it's because of the fear factor or if it is about some kind of stigma that we have around dementia. But yeah, I do think having this curiosity around dementia and around the person and being curious about who they are, who they were, and where they're at now. Is really key to engaging with them. And but why we have difficulty doing that sometimes, I couldn't tell you. It is a good question.
No, I think, sometimes I think the process possibly forces us into that. Someone said to me a couple of weeks ago or whatever that a husband and wife go in, and one of them is diagnosed with dementia. They go in as husband and wife. They come out as patient and carer. And that's not that's because of the way the whole organisation is classed to treat them.
That is true. That is true. Also, I looked at an interview where the person living with dementia was talking. It was with Bluebell Village. I know you did an interview where the person living with dementia was saying she went to the doctor and had a great conversation with the doctor when before the diagnosis. And the moment they got the diagnosis, the doctor just started talking to her husband, I think. And I looked at this short clip of the video and I was just amazed by this idea that they stopped. That the doctor stopped talking to her, And I think it's something that is happening everywhere, whether you're in Switzerland, in the US, in the UK, that the person is less taken seriously.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
dementia engagement is the topic on this edition of the D Word podcast with my guest, Florence Tongelu. Yeah, I equate it. There used to be a program in the UK here a few years ago on Radio 4, I think it was, which was, it was about disability, and the program was called Does He Date Sugar? And it was presented by a man who was in a wheelchair and said that every time he went anywhere with his wife, then everybody, you know, gave him a cup of tea and asked his wife, does he take sugar? And it's like, you know, hello, I'm down here. And it does seem that when people get a dementia diagnosis, they've almost got a big D tattooed on their head.
Yeah.
And everything changes. Whereas
yeah.
what we've been talking about and what you're doing is just treating that person like a person.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's really remembering this, the person is still there. The person is there.
And I think you need a, you know, you need a little bit of knowledge about the condition. I read a blog post that you put up about the fact most people think that dementia is all memory. I mean, it's all involving memory. But you put a really interesting comment up about the changes in sight and perception which come
Yeah.
with dementia that not a lot of people realise, you know, that. They think it's all memory.
Yeah. So that's why I actually did also this. I'm doing a workshop now on the visual changes, because it is something that we kind of forget, that dementia is not just about memory. It's about so much more. And also memory, it's not just remembering. We often think about memory as this, I remember what I did yesterday. But you also have implicit memory. I remember how to ride a bike and things like that. And when you have knowledge about dementia, or when you're curious about actually any, the way the brain works, and realize that a lot of it is compartmentalized, so a lot of it is specialized in one little thing. And to me, that's not just mind-blowing, but it can really change the way you look at the person. And yeah, if we go back to the to vision, I did do the workshop, the video on how I played basketball with someone living with dementia. And if you want to play basketball with someone who has dementia and they can't see the basket, well, how can we expect them to play with us? It just doesn't add up. And I've played basketball. It was, I've had residents who couldn't really move much about their hand, and yet I played basketball with them simply because I was able to make sure they could see the basket. And then if they didn't see the basket, I would put their hand over mine and play for a little while. This way I was triggering that implicit memory I was telling you about, of remembering to ride a bike. So that muscle memory, if we want to call it, of what do I do? And it was interesting. I had one of the person that I was playing with used to play basketball, and I didn't know that at the time. And I had to place their hand, play myself, and then have them play on their own. And once they did the connection between the ball and basketball, they started dribbling, really lifting their trunk and dribbling. And it's just, if we think about dementia as more than just the memory and start being curious about what is still possible, there's a lot more that is possible than we thought, that we think.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that post, which was how to play basketball at any stage of dementia, which I thought, you know, what we were talking about earlier, that is thinking outside the box, but it's brilliant thinking outside the box.
Thank
as
you.
Well. Another thing I wanted to ask you about before we close is the NUTS model of understanding stress. I mean, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I absolutely love this model for dementia, even though it was not about dementia. It was for any kind of stress. But the NUTS model was, from as much as I know, developed by Sonia Lupien. And the idea is that when you have one of four ingredients and you just need one, you're feeling stressed. So it's novelty, unpredictability, threat to the ego, and lack of control. And it's about feeling. It's not about the reality. So like I said, if you feel like something is new, even if it happens every day, it feels new. And when we look at dementia, well, for the kelpok, no, it is stressful. A lot of it feels new, a lot of it feels unpredictable, a lot of it feels like you have no control and it threatens your ego. And for the person living with dementia, well, a lot of it is also new, unpredictable, a threat to the ego and a lack of control. If we think about vision, like we said before, if your visual field is smaller, well, there's a lot you can't predict in your environment. And if you meet someone, even if it's your daughter or your grandchild from my great grandmother, well, when they come to see you and they pretend they know you and directly give you a kiss on the cheek, or I don't know, well, it's unpredictable. You don't have control because all of a sudden we didn't ask for your opinion. And so a lot, when you look at dementia, a lot of those ingredients are present almost constantly. And every time I was working with people living with dementia and I looked at a what is called challenging situation, you could break it down with those nuts, this nuts model, with those ingredients, and just think, okay, well, this time I didn't do it right. I'll give you an example of one time I didn't do it right, where I wanted to help assist someone washing their hands, and I got distracted while assisting them, and so they kind of pushed me away and left because I was distracted and I wasn't giving them the control they deserved. And so it was just going back to them and saying, hey, I'm so sorry. I had no right to be distracted. This is on me and I am really sorry. Let's do it again. And then approaching it in a way of, okay, so this is the sink. Let's turn on the water. Check the temperature. How is it? Good? Too hot? Too cold? Okay, now have them place their hand under the water, bring the soap, and just including the person. I do believe that when we look at dementia care, the person living with dementia is a whole part of the team. And so giving them their voice back, or their voice.
You know, when I saw that kind of nuts model and the bits that make it up, I'd not seen it before, and immediately the word dementia came to mind because I thought, well, that fits absolutely, 100%.
Right.
It's been a real pleasure, Florence. Thank you so much, and
Thank you.
I hopefully everybody's I've learned a bit, and hopefully everybody's learned something. And the real message, I think, if you have one message for someone whose loved one had been diagnosed with dementia, what would that message be?
One message I want to give is that there's more than one way to roam. And so when we face a challenging situation, whichever it is, it's taking this kind of pause and looking around, because it may seem like there is just one way. There's just this one way of doing, but see if there is some other path that you can take that feels more comfortable, that feels more aligned with you and your loved one.
Absolutely. No, I fully agree. And well, all I can say is thank you so much for being my guest. Do keep in
Thank you.
touch with us here on the D Word.
Thank you. Yeah, I love listening to the D World, really. It's amazing. Everybody that you bring in are really interesting people.
Thanks to Florence for some fascinating insight, and there's more on the Dementia Partner Care website. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.